Today, we're talking about what the inner child actually is, how we access it, chap, and why we should give a shit about it.
Mm-hmm. We should give a shit.
Are you ready?
I am.
To
barely.
Dive deep.
My inner child's
into
ready.
The subconscious. Are you sure?
No.
Now, have you tapped into your inner child? Have you ever like done a meditation where you've seen your inner child?
Well, I don't know because I'm always in my inner child, so I really don't know what my adult person looks like. So
you're acting from it.
Yeah,
still.
So I think I have to act like an adult because it's funny that you should ask that because I remember when we were talking about this subject, I was like thinking in my head, I'm like, well, I think I always just do what I kind of inner child want anyway.
Mm.
So it's like, I'm just kind of,
that might be like what happens when you finally integrate the inner child or at least get it on board to a degree where it's conscious. And then you start being able to actually act from it from a, like a healthy place.
Yeah. Because if you don't, I mean, I feel like, you don't like guys have the midlife crisis, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I guess what that is, oh, I should have, and this is about this subject, but it's like,
well,
oh, I should have.
Yeah, I'm afraid, would've. Hold on. I'm mm-hmm. afraid we're going to go down too deep of a rabbit hole before getting
then.
The groundwork.
Let's get the groundwork
and
done.
And then let's come back to the midlife crisis. I think that's a critical piece of this,
yeah.
But I think it's too deep off the bat. So
yes.
let's bring it back to the idea of what an inner child is,
yeah,
just to
know,
like
I don't
go
know what
through
it is.
The basics of like, you know, you hear it in this woo-woo world, right? And you hear it talked about with therapists and psychologists and this, but you're not really sure what in the hell are they, you're thinking like, oh, people are clinging to this idea that there's this child that, you know, part of their personality that they have to go in and do something with. Yeah. And why are we still clinging to that idea? Because it actually works. It actually is a really good modality for getting yourself into integrity, getting yourself to become the person you were meant to be and step fully into your potential. So that's like kind of the thing, you know, with our show, we are always coming back to. But the way I want to kind of traverse into that is through playtime, because my first therapy appointment ever, right? I sat down with the therapist and she started getting to know me and I was, you know, it's very intimidating your first time going to therapy, of course, because you don't know what to expect. Like how deeply can this person see into my soul? And you start, you start noticing yourself maybe for the first time ever, especially when in talk therapy, you start noticing how you're being received by a person who's a professional at analyzing who people, you know, or what people are hiding, what they need to get out on the table so that they can feel better. And one of the very first things she asked me was, what do you do for playtime? And I was like lost. I was like, playtime? What do you mean? I work and then I work and I work. And I was in therapy because I had been in a panic attack for like months at a time. I mean, literally it just didn't go away. I was going through depression, anxiety, and this like panic attack disorder thing. And I didn't end up ever taking any medication for it. And I was trying to find ways of figuring out what was going on. I knew enough and I had people around me who knew enough about psychology to know that you can go do things like talk therapy and so many other modalities now that can help you to understand why you're suffering in these ways. And so that's where I was. I was sitting there. She asked me about playtime. I had absolutely no answer. And she said, your first homework assignment, which is funny because it's homework and we're talking about playtime. Your first homework assignment, because you're probably really good at it since you don't know any playtime, you must be doing homework constantly, is to write a list of what you might consider playtime in your day-to-day life. And so I went home and I started writing my list and it was things like, you know, it really took time for me to first of all come up with what those were, but it was reading a book, going and playing frisbee in the park, or like going on a hike, going on a walk, dancing around, you know, and singing and in my bedroom, in my underwear, whatever, you know, like things where we don't really take the time to do that unless we make conscious time to do it, because there will always be more work to do and we're always glorifying busyness. So I want to enter this realm of inner child understanding through playtime. So if you're listening and chat, maybe you have some insights on like if you ever had a time in your life where you're just maybe workaholic or you had to take life so seriously and you get really rigid or even feel a depression and you have to remember that part of you, that child part of you that lives with you and alongside of you your whole life and bring it online in those healthy conscious and on purpose ways.
Yeah, I mean, I the I think that my work that in just normal employment or whatever, now it's my, you know, it's a company that I've created or that's mine or whatever. But the thing is that, you've got to, for me, it's a little bit easier now that I'm older, because if work wasn't fun overall, yeah, I wouldn't do it. I mean, it's not always fun, but if work wasn't fun overall, I wouldn't do it. I would try to pick something else. Cause I want to like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then I work harder at it and things like that. But,
a lot of people are hearing that right now and going like, well, you just have the privilege to be able to do that. Some of
but I didn't my whole life. Right. I mean, I certainly didn't. And I'm older now. And right.
At a place where you can, yeah, you have a little more ability to do that because of the groundwork you put down.
Yeah. Because I didn't know it. Look, I had plenty of jobs were awful jobs, right? Plenty of jobs and bosses or whatever reason they were, I didn't like them. They're bad jobs to me. But I think certainly in the legal world that I worked at in, there was a lot of stress, a lot of hours you had to commit to it. But I always, I'm maybe not the best, because I saw it earlier on that I needed a break because I was always looking for the break. I'm not one of those people that are like, I got to work. I just like working. I want to go work on the field because it's backbreaking work is good for you. It's like, okay, whatever, dude. Like, I never subscribed to that anyway. So for me, it's like my natural tendency is to goof off. But what I think of, but then building a land development or doing building an asset or building a project, if it's fun, then you don't think of it as work, right? Yeah, so for me, it's a hard one.
I think you're touching on something that's really important, though, is your goofing off is... it happens and it's allowed and it works for you. Mm-hmm. It actually works for you. In other words, it helps you make money in the land development and all the other things that you do that, help you with finance.
Whatever.
Because
right.
Your adult self, who has integrated his inner child to a large degree, or it's has integrated the needs of the inner child, has taken the inner child seriously and been like, okay, we need to make a structured container and time for this goofing off self to come around and play regularly.
And exactly. So like for me, I mean, I have so much stuff that I like doing that there's never been, and I'm always sympathetic for these older guys that are like, when they retire, I don't know what to do. And then they die within a few years of retiring because their work was everything. Yep. I got so much stuff I want to do in life that's fun related.
What you're talking about when people feel so identified with their work that when their work ends, they end. It's a real crisis of identity. And you were talking about, as we started the show, this idea of midlife crisis, where you start realizing, wait, life is not forever. Like this thing, tomorrow is not promised. And I am not doing the shit that I really want to do. I'm not letting my inner child sing and play and dance and ride motorcycles or whatever, it wants to do. And the only way you get to do that is by getting serious about understanding that the needs of the inner child so that you can, as the adult, finally step into that place of the person, the caregiver. As the adult, you are the caregiver to your inner child. And as the caregiver, you can create space for that inner child to let loose, be goofy, and go wild for, a day, a weekend, a month-long trip, or whatever the structure is you create for it.
Yeah, and maybe it was because I was luckier in the environment I grew up in. And it was, like I said, it was a strong mother, and it was my sister. And then when I went to see my dad, it was my dad, my two stepsisters, and my stepmom. So it was always around women. And the women that I was around were a lot more just like fluid and I don't want to say holistic's the thing, but a lot more encouraging of, and I was, maybe it was because I was the only real guy where it was like, oh, well, no, they wouldn't, if I was playing army men or whatever, they wouldn't engage in that, but it was all very like acceptable. It wasn't like, no, you need to be working harder.
So the
it was like,
balance was acceptable.
There was balance there. And maybe that was, maybe
that
another,
it's not all work.
And, maybe it was a credit to my mom or certainly my grandmother who was
so
a big part, but I don't know.
On the other end of the spectrum, perhaps, and maybe not, but maybe, I know we have a lot of similarities, but just to play, I don't know, a devil's advocate, but just play the other side of it. Growing up, I grew up with two entrepreneurial parents who were not like hyper successful entrepreneurs, but definitely, diligent, showing up for that work that they set up for themselves daily. And to me, it looked like work was what you do in order to be, you know, independent. And, you know, we've had a conversation about hyper-independent women and how that all comes about and why that happens, and how it's quite unhealthy. But the idea that got instilled into me was that work was the identity. Like, this is who you are. And then what ended up happening, like I was describing when I ended up in the therapist's office, was that I burned the candle at both ends because I said yes to every job because I, especially in the career of modeling that I was in, you don't have the next job necessarily promised. So it really was, it's just like, you know, I saw my parents as entrepreneurs who were building their business. It wasn't, you know, passed down to them in any way. It was from the ground up. And they had to take every client that came their way and say yes.
Well, they didn't know when the music would stop.
Right. They didn't know when the music would stop because building does take a lot of that, you know, a lot of work. But if you burn yourself out, there's no one to do the work anymore anyway. So there does have to always be a balance. And yeah, I think they've come a long way too. They're, you know, we're always children raising children, right?
Right. So like, well, and I think that the one of the reasons that your work identifies you is because I was discussing this with my kid, and you know, you go and I was telling him about this, and I said, you go to a party or a meeting, or you know, you go and there's other people there. The first question is like, what's your name? John Smith. Mm. What do you do for work? It's not like, what do you do for fun?
I hate that
question.
That's
so, I know. But what do you do for fun? That doesn't really come out at all.
Also, because 99% of people you ask that question to, you know, I guess depending on the circle you're in, but are not going to feel good about their answer.
No,
and that's
not
the sad state that we're in.
Yeah, I play video games. Okay. Well, you know what I mean? It's like, which one, like if you told me that, I was like, oh, sweet. Okay. Look, which one do you play? Do you play this one? This one?
Well,
like,
you do
I think
it for
cool.
a living. It becomes
well,
something
yeah.
different.
But I think, but that's me. And it's a, and as you go to these things and it is weird that this is how society is, but I guess it's just for to paint it in the best possible light. It's maybe that what else are you going to talk about? Because you know, you go somewhere and I try not to do this. You know, you go somewhere and you're like, hey, well, you know, John Smith and you're Rodney Smith. I was like, oh, you know, they ask you like, well, what do you do for work? And when they ask me, I'm like, oh Jesus, how do I answer that?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I do all sorts of stuff, but I'm usually like disaster management. And they're like, oh great. Do you do financial planning? I'm like, no, it's private. I don't do anything for anybody. And then that usually kills it.
Yeah.
But
then it's hard because they, you know, you ask that question because it's an easy way to connect.
Yeah. And then I usually turn around and ask them what they
but
do.
But here's the thing. Why is that the easiest thing to ask an American, especially? I'm just going to talk about
because
Americans.
It's
even though we
because in our society it's important. But it's the other thing is like a lot of guys do this to me and they're saying,
well, no, but not that it's important. It's because that's where we spend our time and we identify deeply with because we spend all of our time there. We don't have the balance.
Well, that's it. You're right.
We end up struggling because we have no space for ourselves to all the other parts of ourselves.
Yeah. And it makes sense because if you think about it, like on a Monday through Friday, I mean, you wake up at, I don't know, 6:30, whatever you got to drive to work, you go to work, you get the kids to whatever. By the time you get home and you have any time to do anything, it's too late in the weekday.
Yeah.
And then the weekend you're catching up one day. And then the other day, if you're into sports or something else, then maybe that sucks up the rest of it. So, and if you're single, maybe you're trying to meet people. So it really does. It very quickly, it can eliminate any sort of just fun time.
Yeah. And it's very sucky. So the you know, this idea of this discussion is to drill down to what the inner child is and how we.
Well, and I'm curious how you dealt with that. Right. Because I think that's the thing, because if you're having a hustle from one job to another, because you don't know when the music's going to stop and somebody tells you, no, now you got to pause and take time out of your livelihood to have fun.
Well, no, to stop being depressed, anxious and having panic attacks.
But that's gotta be a big thing.
It's a big awakening.
God. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't.
For me, it was a full blown existential crisis. And what I would call it is a dark night of the soul, essentially, because, and what that means in easy terms is realizing that you're identified with something that no longer serves you and then going through the grieving process, which is painful, sometimes long, of letting go of that identity and replacing it with one that serves you better. And that's what dark night of the soul really means here. And when I went through that process, which took time, energy, you know, going to therapy, speaking this stuff out loud, journaling, getting into all different types of modalities of working on self and accessing lots of times the young parts of myself, this inner child piece of me, that I could understand why I ended up as extremely in struggling in pain as I was. And that took a lot of showing up for, you know, myself and essentially showing up for the inner child and going like, okay, you have my attention. You're screaming through depression. You're screaming at me through anxiety and you're screaming at me through panic attacks. I mean, debilitating panic attacks. I don't want to take a pill to mask you because you're trying to tell me something important. Something inside of me is trying to tell me something important. The first thing, you know, I'm just going to give my journey because I think it's always a good way to relate is through someone else's journey. But what I first went to was, what's wrong with me? There must be something physically wrong with me. Is it a brain tumor? Is it something wrong with my hormones? Am I out of whack in some way? Do I have some disease that I can't figure out, some mysterious disease? I went to tens of doctors and they looked at me, looked at my charts, said, we can prescribe you Prozac of some sort, you know, whatever type of Prozac. And I said, it can't be my mind. It can't be my mind. I can't be thinking myself or stressing myself or working myself into this issue. And I looked in every route. You know, I learned so much about my diet, my hormones, all the other things that I thought it could potentially be. And I feel a lot better because I did do all that work with those things too, sure. And that all does play a critical part into our mental health.
But in your case, you might have been just weeding it out.
And exactly. And at the end of the day, it was the main factor. And, you know, all those things come into play. But the main factor was my inability to slow down with my, essentially my symptoms, which look like depression, panic attack, anxiety. And listen to what was actually being asked of me and what's being asked underneath the dis-ease in the body. A lot of the time it happens through actual disease when it gets really loud, is this conversation that needs to be had with the lost, repressed parts that we don't want to look at anymore because we don't think they serve us. In my case, my inner child needed playtime. It was no longer allowed to be goofy and spontaneous and, you know, playing, and it now needed to be serious and work every day and be making money. End of the day, that was like it's the most important thing. So it no longer could be a child doll. So when I brought that all to the surface and I started integrating, you know, I started putting those playtime things intentionally into my life, it was miraculous in the ways that I was able to feel balanced to, you know, and it didn't happen overnight and it wasn't just one thing, but it was just focusing on what is that part of me, that inner psychological part of me looking to what need is it needing to have met? Does it need to be prioritized? Yes, of course, that's the main issue. Does it need my validation and affection? Am I trying to get my validation or affection outside of myself externally too much? Because some of that is good, but if I'm looking to get validated constantly externally, my inner child's in here starving. It's looking for me to say, we are going to be okay. I got your back, basically. And I know it kind of, maybe to some people listening, it sounds a little bit weird to separate yourself into like this part that's a pseudo child and or even a teen, depending on where they're at in their emotional trauma, and this other part of you that's an adult. But I think it's really helpful when you start doing this work to understand there's different parts of you that make up who you are. And when we don't pay attention to them long enough, we see other catastrophic symptoms come up that look like even further distancing or separating of the parts.
Well, yeah, and I mean, nutrition, obviously, you know, you have a well-balanced diet. So, I mean, mentally, you have a well-balanced, you know, a relationship, a well-balanced job versus fun. I mean, I think for guys, at least for the guys that I know, well, I have a couple of guys that work too hard, but it's a little more natural to want to go play or goof off. And it could be maybe because, you know,
is it escape or is it?
I don't know. I mean, in my case, I do a lot of it with my spouse. So yeah. For me, it's like, do you want to go take the bikes out for an hour or, you know, I really want to go here. I really want to go to this place. And for us, a lot of it is we just go try different places for dinner.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And you know, it's
I do want to discern though between the two when we're talking about going and doing something that's for fun and playtime and it's intentional in that way. Mm-hmm. there's a big difference between making an intentional time where you're going to like have beautiful expression, right? Where your conscious adult self is choosing this because it feels good and it's going to be revitalizing and refreshing. And where you're, what I said, escaping, but that can be misconstrued as also playtime. So let's call it avoidance. So when you're actually just avoiding the things you need to show up for and the feelings that are coming up, which is really just your inner child, like trying to show you like what it needs. And then we get into a really scary zone. Cause if we get on the tendency of avoiding, like, you know, let's just say when you go, when someone goes and watches or plays video games on a daily basis or smokes weed on a daily basis, this is a good one. It's going to probably piss off a lot of people, but the truth is that when you go do something in that type of habitual addictive manner, you're no longer doing it because just because it's a fun, intentional, you know, playtime. You're doing it because you are trying to avoid something you need to feel that your inner child is essentially trying to communicate.
If you attack that feeling and get to it and work through it, then these other things might come a little more naturally, or those things that you would have done as an escape aren't needed as much anymore.
Well, and that's why we should care about this part of ourselves, the repressed part. The inner child usually looks like very shadowy, because what we stuff into this, you'll call it the little self, you know, we stuff into this person, this other person that lives inside of us, we'll say, is all the things that we thought were not allowed to live in us, and all the things that we thought we severed and we're just compartmentalized and we're just not going to look at that anymore, because somewhere along the line, usually from our caregivers growing up, we received the message that those parts of ourselves are not allowed to exist, because, you know, when you need too much, then we don't want to be around you. So you better just stuff down your needs for anything. And then you become the people pleaser. Or, you know, when you act out too loudly and your voice is too loud, you're showing off. So turn that down, dim your light. You know, we don't want to see it. Nobody cares about you anyway. Right. And now your specialness, you know, your uniqueness is completely squandered, and you just put that down too. And I'm going to just fit in. I'm going to be like everyone else. I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb.
Which, whatever that is.
Right.
Whatever that is.
You know, and the list goes down the line. But any place that is seething under the surface and comes out usually, you know, when we're in conflict with someone or triggered by someone, and these parts of us that come forward and they say, you're just like your father, or you're just like your mother, or, you know, whatever happens. And we go, why are we're pissed in that moment? Because there's something true about that, right? And it's not that it's true on the surface usually. It's true in the subconscious. It's true for the inner child that we thought we had fucking severed. We thought that thing was not living in us. And it's not until we befriend those parts, or that, we'll just call it the part, the inner child. It can just be an accumulation of all those repressed parts. It's not until we befriend the inner child that we begin to bring that stuff online again in a way that can actually fuel our greatness. And it's a very scary voyage, which I recommend having a professional online with, because it's often needed, because there can be some darkness that you have to sift through. Not impossible at all, but incredibly important. And it'll probably be the most accelerating thing that anyone ever does when they start doing that type of inner work.
Well, and on its on the more surface of it, and as far as having these other things that you really enjoy doing that are fun, or, you know, refreshing, things like that, at one point you're going to end up not working in this industry that you're working in. I mean, there is going to be a time, unless you unfortunately, not you, but one unfortunately passes away before they're retired. At one point, you gotta get out of the job, you gotta get out of the money-making mode, or for the most part, you'll be out of it. Either retired, you know, you tried it for 30 years, or you're onto something that's not as intense, but you need to have something that you can do instead of just turn on the TV, sit there all day long, turn it off, go to bed. You have to have something. And I think that's where a lot of people don't really discover that until they're in retirement. And then they say these things like, I'm having the best time of my life. I feel like I'm a kid again. And why wasn't I doing this a lot of my life? And things like that. And it's kind of sad, because you don't discover this until you're that much older. My thing is maybe when you're talking to me, I'm definitely listening. I'm highly sympathetic to people in these scenarios. My thing, as you're saying this, I think the opposite. I'm like, I don't know where my adult self is, because I think that I know I'm a kid, and I know I'm putting on that not game face to be an adult, but I'm just like, I just want to go and do stuff, and I'm dying right now. I want to go out. Maybe that's ADD. I don't know. I just want to go like, do this, go here, do this, go there, do this, you know, and it's like all the time. And it's like, but how can I do that in a way that's productive?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You also have to sustain it.
I'm like, let's go, let's do fun stuff. And it's like, I want to wake up every day, because I had so many jobs that on a Sunday, I was just miserable. Sundays were the worst, because I knew I was going back to jail basically the next day. And that went on, and I kept telling myself, one day you're not going to deal with that anymore. And I got there, and I'm just like, still for however many years, I'm like, just what do I want to get into next? Sundays are not horrible. I like Sundays. Now I'm like, Monday, what am I going to attack, you know, Monday? So I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. But at the same time, I recognized that much younger. And I knew, like, this sucks. I don't want these kind of jobs. So I know that's not exactly what you're saying, but what I'm saying is it's harder for me to understand, because I always sought the fun in the day. What was going
to
be
fun? I think that maybe it's a good way to correlate it to the swap that we talk about a lot on this show of victim mentality, which a lot of people feel in their day-to-day job. Well, yeah, like we're even listening to this conversation, like, well, y'all two are, they must have some imagination of how privileged we are in all these different ways.
Right.
And we are very privileged in many ways. But the difference is that we're recognizing the privilege and working from them and with them and using them.
Well, listen, and by the way, let's talk about that really quickly. And you don't know, somebody that's listening to you or listening to me, they don't know what we had to do to get here.
100%. But even besides that, the point is that even if you are the most, whatever that looks like, the most privileged person,
right,
then that is your duty to use those privileges to your advantage,
in my
opinion. And we're going to get deeply into privilege and the privileged man in another conversation.
I skipped ahead, sorry.
In another conversation. But I do want to say that the idea of the victim mentality, which is I have to show up to this job. I have to show up to this job because life has happened to me. Mm. I have to do this work because life has happened to me.
And my dad did
I have no choices.
Right.
This isn't a choice. I mean, that's fucking bullshit. First of all, that's never true. You always have a choice. Now, the choice may not be easy, and more likely, and the reason that you're staying in that victim mentality is that the choice to show up to that shit job that you don't like keeps you invested in some identity that is tired and toxic that you need to really investigate. And so that's what we're talking about today, is how to look at that stuff, which is all seated in the inner child, and start twisting and untwisting, unbinding your mind from being a victim to the job, a victim to having to work because you're living in such scarcity. Scarcity is the most victim-y word ever. And start reframing the thinking around it, where it's about, I get to show up to this job because I got hired. What a great thing to be grateful for. So when I show up all the freaking way. And when I show up all the freaking way, I get promoted, I get bonuses, I get, you know,
and
people around me like me, and they start gravitating towards me, and they want to give me other work and jobs, and then I find my way to wherever I want to go, where, you know, you're climbing the ladder that you're creating for yourself out of the whatever you think is the shitty job or the thing that you don't want to be doing, rather than just sitting and festering further and further into it, pretending like you have absolutely no control over it. This is the person who is not recognizing the screaming inner child and just getting sicker and sicker mentally, physically, disease is setting into the body and will continue to until they realize this.
Yeah, well, and you know, obviously, like you said, we'll get into the victim mentality and some other, because I really want to talk about that. But you know, what you're saying is like, it's a cultural thing. You know, you look to these exterior factors and, you know, like your parents or other people around you, jobs, whatever. But, you know, the thing, well, we'll talk about it because I'm so dying to talk about the victim mentality, but I don't want to go down that road right now because we'll do say that for another time. But from a going to do things for you, and this has been a reoccurring theme in what we talk about, is you have to know yourself. You have to do things for you. You have to understand that you do have the choice to do things. And if you're going to be the good, you know, the begrudging employee, the victim employee in your job, and you're going to mope around and, you know, and that's your, somehow your burden to bear, mm-hmm. you know, it's your choice though. It's your choice yeah. because then what happens is.
'Cause everyone has seen the person who shows up to yeah. the exact same job, right. the other employee who's like jubilant and right. like everybody loves that person. They are so invested in their job. And even if it's the janitor or whatever, you know, whatever job it is that someone might say, I don't want that job because it's tedious or whatever the thing, they show up every day with a smile, with care. They, you know, they talk to their people at work and they build relationships and it fills them up. And it's not that you have to force this on yourself, but it's that you've got to consider that you have control. Like, what can you control here? What can you change here if you need a change, instead of just saying it's happening to me?
You definitely are in control. And I think that's this thing here. And you're in control of your own, you know, your destiny.
Yeah. My mom has always said, her famous, you know, mantra has always been, we're not left to our fates without the ability to affect the outcome. And it's like, the reality is that whatever your life looks like, whatever toxic ass situation you're in, there is choices that you are making, whether patterned in from a long time of emotional trauma that you have not healed or wherever they are stemming from, that if you look at and you assess, you will be able to change your choice, and that will create a way out of the situation, or a way to change the situation, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, you're, but again, like the thing is, you're in control. I mean, do the mm-hmm. work, you're in control.
And now, just I want to be clear, there are real victims in the world, of course. Like, of course. There are people that are in situations that are too many factors deep out of their control, where they might not be able to access all the help on their own. And in those situations, you need to reach out for help.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah. And that's been we've also been talking about that as well throughout the, you know, in theory, you know, mm-hmm. we've been saying that, but
we need each other.
For the most part. Yeah. For the most part, if you're sitting there thinking, well, woe is me, but you really have a normal life for the money, yeah. whatever that is, but you have a normal, you know, you're in the United States, you have a decent right. life. I mean, come on, you have
privileges.
Yeah,
you are privileged.
Take those and run with it. Score
and
the touchdown.
I want to just maybe wrap this convo up with the actionable, you know, ideas of how to actually access the inner child and heal the inner child, which is, you know, there's so much work on this and it's a very in-depth, you know, would take us years to give all that information, but and I'm sure you can source that from so many different places. Maybe we'll put a book list in the show notes for this one. But the first idea and the first way to start accessing it that we can give you, I think, from our platform, is to really focus on the slowing down. So, like, when you're feeling mad at your job, when you're feeling like you don't have enough time for playtime, just to stay on topic of what we've been discussing, or when you are in pain because your relationship isn't the type you want, you know, whatever your thing is that you're struggling with, take that as an indicator and as a signal to slow down with yourself, figure out what's going on inside your body. I mean, it can literally feel like a tightness in the jaw, a constriction in the throat, in the chest, uneasiness in the stomach, queasiness, nausea. It can feel pain. It can be pain in the shoulder. It can be a reoccurring pain in a joint. I mean, it can be anything that's an indicator for you to slow down and basically ask your inner self, we'll just say, but we're talking really to this inner part of us that we haven't spent enough time with, the inner child. And you slow down enough to ask it what it needs. And it will, the answers will float to the surface. It doesn't take a lot of, you know, you don't have to be a guru who's sitting in crisscross applesauce and meditating all day long to get this to come through. The information that your subconscious wants you to know, the information that your inner child wants you to know, floats to the surface as soon as you slow down with it and make that dedicated commitment that you're going to actually listen and give a shit about it finally.
Yeah, and there it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and there it is. And that's really the entry point to starting that process and that healing. And it does create this, you're going to create like, I'm going to call it like synergy with your inner child. You're basically teaming up and this is the most important relationship you'll ever, hone and improve on and all that, because it's where the majority of your healing gets to happen, so that you don't keep creating the same patterns. And so that, by the way, if you have children and you're listening to this, so that you don't pass those on and create that generational trauma that they're going to have to sift through. Which, if you have any of these patterns, I bet you when you start doing inner child work and ask your inner child what's going on, it's going to tell you it's this thing, and you're going to say, why did we start out? Why did we end up with this thing where we let people transgress us all the time? And it's going to say, well, when we were little, and of course you probably need a therapist to get all the way down to this, but when we were little, we didn't get our needs considered very well. And so we just decided that we're going to become, a people pleaser. We're going to become someone who does for everyone else, but doesn't consider ourselves. And anyway, that's just an example, but you'll start working through these things and it will be absolutely miraculous what comes about as a result. So that's our, this is one of our deeper episodes.
Yeah, Jeff. A little bit.
So hopefully, even if you don't understand all of it or if it doesn't gel with you here, you can just keep yourself open to the energetics of what's being talked about, and letting that seed be planted in you is important in itself.
That's right.
All right, guys. So that was a lot for today. Love you so much for showing up. Please don't forget to subscribe. And if you're on the podcast app, please rate, review us. Leave us a beautiful comment, if you will. And of course, you can comment on all the social media feeds when we get back to everyone we possibly can. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone who might need to hear it. We do this show every week, so we'll catch you again next week. And I just want to remind you that you already are.